Welcome back to today's episode. Today we're going to be talking about ADHD, ADD, and autism. Really to bring awareness, this episode is going to be airing in the month of April, which is Autism Awareness Month. So we really wanted to have a down-to-earth, open conversation about a lot of things that circle around this subject of ADHD and autism. So some of us have personal experience, some of us have experience with our kids going through this. So we really just wanted to talk about all this with you all today. We're in this society today, in the US at least, where the expectations of kids today is to sit quietly at a desk for 8 hours a day while they're in school. A lot of schools across the board have reduced or taken away things like recess and reduced gym time for, you know, PE class. And so it's even more just sit at your desk, just try to be quiet, don't act out, don't get fidgety, and all of these different things. And what in turn that has happened is if they can't sit still, if they are fidgety, if they are speaking out, you know, they're getting angry, they're having behavioral issues. It's, oh, they've got ADD, ADHD, they need to be diagnosed, they need to be put on medication. We dealt with that in school with our kids, and I was full on stop, not, but across the board, working with parents with school age kids, it's crazy. It's just mind blowing to me, you know? And of course, I mean, I understand it. If you're in a classroom and you're a teacher and you've got 20 some kids and you've got half of them that can't sit still and they're bouncing around, like that can be very distracting to the other kids. It's distracting to you as a teacher, right? But I also wonder, and I mean, a lot of my friends that I talk with has clients, kids with, behavioral issues, you know, I also have to ask, and this is one of the things we'll discuss today, is it ADHD or even being on the ASD, the autism spectrum, or is it a lack of boundaries and a lack of attention from parents or adults around them in their daily life, right? Is it more attention seeking? Are there other things going on that haven't been brought to the table to talk about, you know, especially if kids have trauma in their life, in their household, whether it's abuse of any kind or just, you know, a death in the family that's affected that kid, right? Like these are all traumatic things that can bring about the same symptoms as ADHD, not so much autism, but ADD and ADHD. So I want to talk about those types of things with you ladies today and kind of get into the nitty gritty a little bit about what we do know about these different things with kids and adults. One of the biggest things that is just mind blowing here in the US is I want to go some of the statistics here. So autism now affects 1 in 54 children in the US. That's huge. That's absolutely huge. 1 in 10 kids struggle with ADHD. There's 1 in 3 kids with allergies and 1 in 4 with a mental health condition and 1 in 4 with asthma. Now, why do we mention allergies and asthma, right? These all fall into the same realm when it comes to kids. These are what we call the childhood epidemics, and they all boil down to the same root causes that are going on. So that's why we want to bring all of those statistics up and really talk about those. So where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the question of, is it ADHD or is it lack of boundaries with parents, lack of attention with the parents, with kids?
I think, you know, when you are in observation mode, whether it's your kid, own kids, neighbors, classroom, like, I don't know about you all, but I was one of the moms that went and I loved going to school and doing the classroom parties. That's how you got to meet the kids and know the kids and meet your kids' friends. And there was always the child or more than one sometimes that was just bouncing off the wall. And sometimes he just needed attention, right? It wasn't that they had a deficit of it. They just needed more of it. And I think there's a fine line between those kids that just like, need more attention in the fact that they just, that's just their makeup, their genetic makeup. And then there's the child who really struggles with just attending at all. Because I think there's, that's where the difference lies is if you can calm a little one down and they can focus and they can take things in and follow directions and, you know, multi-step directions, like go upstairs, make your bed, put away your laundry and brush your teeth. And if they can do those things pretty, you know, regularly or successfully, I think you've got a child who's attending. But if you're overly concerned about a child that isn't able to follow directions at all, or when they're in a social setting, just really isn't, they're not able to, you know, sit quietly with the teacher and follow directions and do the steps and stuff like that. I think that's when, you know, the red flags need to go up and need to kind of look into, is this by a choice thing, or is this something that they really have no control over? Because I know a lot, I've talked to a lot of parents whose kids have ADHD because the foundation that I'm volunteer for, and it's a struggle. I mean, we all know it's a struggle to have someone that you have to constantly be attending to because they're not paying attention. So I think some of it just comes from observation, and that's where the first steps of even very beginnings, you know, going to the pediatrician, I think my kid may have ADHD. What do I do? You know, that's right there. There's a questionnaire in there right there.
I agree. And I think like what I've done with my clients who have come to me with kids who the school, it always tends to start with the school. The teacher says so-and-so is a distraction in class. They're just all over the place. They can't pay attention. It's this and that. I go back and I sit with the parent. I go, okay, what is your day like? I want you to write down for a couple of days everything that's going on. And every time that child is acting up, what's going on at that moment? What are they asking for? Right. And this has many times brought the subject of, I need to make sure I'm spending more time with my child, rather than, especially today, putting them in front of an electronic, having that one-on-one, you know, time and being more structured at home. Kids in general need structure, right? We all know that. You know, they don't know what to do next until they learn structure and what step comes after this step and that step, right? So that's our goal as parents, to teach them that. If we're doing things for them, if we're not teaching them all of these different steps to do and making sure they can follow through, like I said, putting them in front of an electronic to keep them calm, to keep their mind busy, you know, which accentuates the problem. I know Kathy, you and I will talk about that here in a few minutes, but when I do that with a parent, if they're coming back to me with, you know, we spend a lot of time together, we have conversations, this and that, I spend floor time with the child, whatever, then it comes to a fact of, okay, maybe we have something going on. And I bring attention to this just because of the fact that when it typically comes from a teacher, I always take into effect, they are seeing the child at school. And many times a child will act out in school things that are going on at home that they can't verbalize. So I think it's really important for schools to start combining the thought process of what else is going on in this child's life. You know, is it just the fact that, you know, because they're trained to look for things like ADHD, right? If the kid's just a distraction and they just call the parents, say, you know, you need to take them to a pediatrician. We need the fact that they need to have prescription for ADHD or get diagnosed. And then of course they pile on top of that. There's a lot of things that can happen in school, a lot of programs that we have that can help that child with X, Y, and Z, right? Like extra help for reading, extra help for math, but they can't get access to these unless they have a 504 plan or an IEP, right? Depending on what grades they're in. So, and that alone, I think really, really sucks. We struggled with that. The fact that you had to get specific diagnosis in order for your child to get help in school. It definitely shouldn't be like that. So that's why I bring awareness to that question and that thought process. It's overwhelming for parents when a child has behavioral issues, right? But today we're seeing more and more, when you go to a restaurant and you see families with kids at a table and they stick a tablet or a phone up in front of them rather than taking that time to have a conversation with them, you know, and connect with them. And generally, it typically happens at home too. You know, in my experience, at least 7 out of 10, it's happening at home as well. You know, they're plopping the kids down in front of the TV while they eat, or, you know, mom's going to go do this, dad's going to go do that, turn the TV on, put the toys in front of the TV, the kid's fine, right? So a lack of that social interaction can attribute to this as well. So obviously it makes it more difficult to figure out, does a child exhibit ADHD symptoms or autism traits, or is it a lack of X, Y, and Z coming from the home that they're in? You know, so I think it needs to be addressed. It's something that needs to be start bringing up in conversations, you know, and parents asking themselves these things. It's hard to be a parent. It's so hard being a parent. We all know how hard it is to be a parent. And you could not pay me to be a parent to a younger child today. You know, you really couldn't with everything going on. And, you know, how much parents are struggling, whether it's financially or just everyday things right now, right? And you add on a kid who has behavioral issues or isn't getting enough attention, and, you know, mom and dad are just wore out. You know, they're done by the time they get home. They're spent, you know, and there's a lot of guilty feelings that come along with that as parents. I mean, I've been through it. I'm sure all of you have been through it as well. So how do you find that fine line? How do you get down to the nitty gritty of it? So.
Well, some of it's fear too. I think a lot of parents, maybe at least one, if there's two parents in the home, right? At least there's probably one that has some kind of like, I'm wondering, you know, what's up with little Jimmy or little Jenny, you know, like, do all kids act like this? Is this normal? And that's why I think as a parent, being observant and going to functions and observing kids that age, and how does my kid do in a group, and do they wait their turn, and can they follow the teacher's direction, and are they having joy in their day, or are they ADD, the attention deficit disorder, not necessarily the age, the hyperactivity. Are they more quiet? Are they reserved? Are they so introverted inside their head that they're not able to really to do the attentive thing and be the kid that's, you know, talking up in front of the class or doing things like that? So there's so many different things. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't grow up with kids in my class, you know, saying, well, I have ADHD, or I have, you know, labeling themselves. I didn't grow up that way. So you know, you just took the kid for what they were and that kind of stuff. And I think there's so many labels now, so many diagnoses, so many labels, which on one side of the coin is great, because then it gives you a bit of a roadmap, right? If you know, okay, my child has this XYZ, these are the things that I need to be concerned about or look out for. But I also really don't like the cookie cutter approach. I don't like the labeling and putting kids in containers and, okay, all of you blah, blah, blahs are over here and that kind of stuff. But I do think the one thing I notice when I'm talking with parents with the Magic Foundation at the convention is there's a fear. There's a big fear. And if you can just be really brave as a parent and open that door and just go to reputable people and get some, you know, resources and information, and just start slowly looking at the information so that you can take it in the bites that you can handle it. That's when you can start to make decisions. Like, you know what? I think we've dealt with this situation for long enough. I think we need to go see the pediatrician, or I think we need to talk to the school counselor, or whatever you feel like your next, you know, right step is, so that you feel comfortable with it.
Agree. 100%. Obviously, as parents, you know, like going through it, you get so overwhelmed with everything being thrown at you. And we've talked about this before, right? Amongst ourselves, is that when you're a parent and you have all these things being thrown at you and you're feeling very overwhelmed and you don't know what to do and all of this is pretty new to you, right? Especially if you have younger children, then you're going as far as you're being offered a medication to help your child with X, Y, and Z, or you have the holistic route, like what we teach about, and changing the foods that they're eating, looking at the chemicals that are in there, the environment, which is our epigenetics, what in the environment is triggering these things to happen and can be lowered to help them out, right? And it can be a long process. It can be an involved process. And as a parent, I mean, I did the same thing with my oldest. You know, we didn't know answers. You know, it was the late 90s, early 2000s. And, you know, they diagnosed him with everything under the sun. It was just one at a time. Well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it's that. And just throwing a medication at him. And because none of what he was diagnosed with was actually his problem, it actually ended up being a brain injury that wasn't diagnosed until he was 12. And that was just the times that we were in and where things had not gone yet, technology-wise, research-wise, and everything, right? It's just one of those things where I had to watch my son go through the gamut of, yes, you know, this was going to be in a parent's mind, this was going to be an easy fix, right? Kind of that easy button, if you will. And it wasn't, because there were so many side effects. I mean, one medication might have had him sitting in a chair with drool coming down the corner of his mouth, to the next medication had him putting things through a wall, you know? And these are a lot of side effects that the medications have. And so many of the ADHD medications that are out there are used for other diagnoses, whether it's ODD, PDD, things like that. So, you know, they're kind of a all-encompassing, because they're stimulants or they're bringing them down, you know, just depending on what they need. So it was crazy to see the changes that were going on. And it scared me. It scared me as a parent. So when you're a parent going into this and getting this type of a diagnosis for your child, and you're handed a medication and said that the medication is going to help with this, and now all of a sudden you're seeing all of these side effects, and now you have even more of overwhelm going, I thought this was supposed to fix it, right? But if you pair that, that's one thing I learned to do, was to pair things holistically and making changes at home, that ultimately led me to see that there were other things deeper going on, and pushing for more testing as he got older. But being able to change the foods in his diet, to take the chemicals out of the home, to be aware of dyes and preservatives and things of that nature, to look at alternative supplements for nutrient deficiencies, not understanding that nutrient deficiencies were really at the bulk of what was going on. Because if you have a brain that's starving for nutrition, it can't function, right? So it can be very, very overwhelming. But I totally get it as a parent who's been there. When you have that prescription in front of you from a doctor and go, yes, okay, you know, this is going to fix it. And it's kind of like a weight lifted off of your shoulders until the other foot drops.
Yeah. You know? Well, that whole white coat syndrome, you know, I mean, you think that the doctors have the answers. So you're so relieved when they give you, you know, a pill, you know, pill for an ill. And like you said, you know, sometimes that's not the answer. So There are so many different things that need to be looked at versus just take a pill for this or that. You know, I mean, yeah, we've discussed this ad nauseum, you know, on so many different podcast episodes. But yeah, I can, you know, I haven't dealt with that personally, but I can imagine, you know, a parent who's in that situation who thinks that, you know, the doctor is going to have the answer and fix their child. And it doesn't necessarily always happen that way.
Yeah. Yeah, well, absolutely. Go ahead, Bobby.
I was just going to say, there's a whole section of people that we haven't even brought up, which is adult attention deficit, right?
Yeah. And even high school to adult.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole section of people that are trying to navigate and be independent in life, and they're struggling as adults or young adults. And, you know, we're going to go through some specifics in a minute on, you know, what the causations could be, some things that you can try that I would say would be more foundational things. If you are going down this road, like you're opening that door and you're like, okay, I'm going to take my head out of the sand. I'm going to address this. I'm going to be brave and ask the questions. These are the things coming up that we'll talk to you about that can help you just start taking those first few steps, you know, and whether you are the person that's an adult or have a teenage child or a little one with attention issues, all of this that we're going to talk about is going to help anybody with those situations.
Yeah, I was just going to pop in and say that, Shannon, my situation as a parent was somewhat similar to yours. And, you know, you go down this journey of, you know, just being so darn tired and everything, overwhelmed with just being a parent in general, and then having a child that is going through all these things, experiencing what they're experiencing and feeling helpless. And you get to the point where, okay, I'm just going to try this med out for a little while and everything. For my son, it was two different meds. The first was okay, and then the second was even worse. And the second one made him like a zombie, and the first one pretty much did nothing. And I'm like, no, okay, we'll start to peel back and try to figure out what it is that's going on. Again, it was early to mid 90s, didn't have that information, didn't have that support, didn't have the awareness. So for anybody's listening, you have a gold mine of information available to help you nowadays. It's so much better. And just take heart in knowing that it's there. Use it, please.
Yeah, there's so much more research that points to what's at the root of the neural dysfunction that's going on. You know, we've just done an episode on brain health, two episodes on brain health. So that's going to give you a lot of information on how the brain works, right? And when it comes to kids or adults who have ADHD, to those who have autism or somewhere on the autism spectrum disorder, it all boils down to just a couple of things. It comes as far as environmental triggers, those toxins that are coming in, gut health. Is your gut able to do the things that it needs to do, absorb the things that it's able to absorb so that the brain is getting the nutrients it needs? And then their neural health and, you know, neurotransmitters, the vagus nerve, all sorts of things like that, that are going to help to keep you calm and focused, right? And your brain getting the nutrients that it needs rather than sending signals out that it's starving for things and giving you all these different types of side effects and symptoms, right? Bobby, how about you open this into what is missing, what's happening, you know, with these kids and the brain and everything, and what's going on?
Basically, there is a disconnect. So there's something that we've talked about, we've brought up a few times on our podcasts, called the HPA axis, and it stands for the hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenal. An axis meaning that they all are kind of impacting each other, basically. Not kind of, but they are. So there is a breakdown in communication in the brain. And the front of your brain is where a lot of executive functioning occurs. And there's messaging inside your brain going back and forth to different parts of your brain. And when that function or those neural pathways are interrupted, and we're going to talk a lot more in this podcast about what would be interrupting it, but when that communication is weak or goes down or is in the wrong direction, that's when things like neurotransmitters get inhibited. And neurotransmitters are your body's messengers. Neuro meaning the nerve, and transmitters, it's transmitting a message. And when those neurotransmitters are either suppressed or there's one too high and one too low, that's when the behavioral piece of it comes in and the memory lapses. No, I forgot to do my homework. Or I know you told me to make my bed, but I didn't remember that I was supposed to brush my teeth and actually put away my laundry. All that kind of stuff. And that even transponds into an adult. You know I was supposed to, you know, turn in this work on time, but I forgot my briefcase at home that has all the notes in it, or, you know, things like that. So inhibiting neurotransmitters and the process of your body with the different things, assimilation and neural pathways, all have to be working well in order for you to pay attention. So there's real specific things that we're going to get into. And I think Kathy probably has a great one to start us off with, that she can explain what the attention deficit really gets impacted by.
The gut-brain connection is huge. It's a two-way road. Not only does the brain communicate to the gut, but the gut communicates to the brain, and it does so through the vagus nerve. And I mentioned this on one of the other episodes, but I'll repeat it here, is most people aren't aware that the gut and the brain actually start out as the same tissue as a fetus. So, and then the vagus nerve is actually the connection between the two. So, I mean, everything from leaky gut, leaky brain, you know, that's a thing, even having your back out or your neck out of adjustment can cause issues between this communication roadway. So it's really important to look at not only, you know, some of the food additives and things like that we're going to talk about, but actually having, you know, the gut lining intact and having good bowel movements and things like that are going to be so important to, you know, this issue with ADHD.
And to jump on that with the vagus nerve, the adrenal, the HPA, the A part of it, adrenal glands sit on top of our kidneys. It's way down deep in your gut. And a lot of people don't realize that your adrenal glands health really can impact your mood. It can impact, you know, how you digest sugars. It can impact your kidney function. A lot of people that have allergies or asthma, things like that, those can be traced all the way down to your adrenal gland, and the function between your brain and your adrenal gland system and your pituitary. When everything, when this highway has potholes in it and barricades and roadblocks and damage from all the things that we're going to talk about, that's when you get communication breakdown. And that's when the brain's like, I'm not really sure what to do. So I'm just either not going to do anything, or I'm going to go the opposite way and just kind of go nutty.
Let's talk about gut health while we're here for a minute before we move on. So gut health specifically, because it is the thing, it's our second brain, right? And it is the thing that feeds our brain, right? So what are some of the things in today's world, when we're talking about kids today, that impact what they're doing, whether they're what they're eating, what they're doing, that's impacting their gut health?
Well, definitely the food dyes and the processed food. When you see something come out of a bag or a box that's colored, that's got an ingredient list, that's got a lot of words that I couldn't even tell you how to pronounce them, let alone what they are. You know, even macaroni and cheese, let's say, total standard for kids. I fed it to my kids, but there's macaroni and cheese that's got artificial colors in it. And then there's macaroni and cheese that's colored with annatto, or not annatto. It's called, I think that's the name of it. It makes it yellow, but it's made from like a nut or some type of powder from a nut. And I remember kind of checking into that and being like, oh, well, that's way better than somebody in a factory squirting some powder in there that's going to make it look yellow. I mean, macaroni and cheese doesn't have to actually look yellow, but that's what we're used to seeing. So all that kind of processed stuff, fruit chews and, you know, just the different things that really our body doesn't even know what they are. So it has to kind of pick it apart and get rid of the junk.
And speaking of macaroni and cheese, gluten is a huge issue. I mean, it's a neurotoxin to so many people. You know, it creates those excitotoxins that we've talked about before too. So that would be one of the first things that I look at. When the dyes and the gluten would be one of the first things I remove from a diet if they are having a lot of issues with ADHD.
And one of the biggest things with gluten is it's the flour. You have glyphosate here in the US that is sprayed on wheat crops, right? But you also have folic acid, synthetic folic acid that is sprayed on that flour before it's processed into different things at food manufacturing plants. And that is not the same as folate, which our body needs for proper neural function. It's actually very detrimental to our systems. It's destroying to our systems in our brain and creates inflammation. And everything made with white flour that's processed that you buy in the store has this heavily sprayed on it. And so if you're someone who has the time and is willing to do things, like you don't want to get rid of the bread, you know, maybe it's especially with kids who have autism, they're very texture focused. And maybe that's one of the few things that they will eat, to do something like homemade fermented sourdough, you know, or waffles that are made with, you know, homemade sourdough and things like that. Like that's better for them. And even better if you can get the whole grains that you grind yourself, right? Like I know a lot of people aren't going to do that, but unfortunately that's where we're at, you know, or even importing flours from other countries. I know for my daughter, we import flour directly from Italy because it's literally the only flour that she can eat, and she has gluten intolerance, you know? So it just goes to show you the differences. Like we've talked before on this podcast, the differences between food here in America and food in different countries, right? So, but it is a huge, huge issue. There's a big correlation between kids who have ADD, ADHD, and even autism and allergies. You know, we read the statistics, autism affects 1 in 54 children and 1 in 10 children struggle with ADHD. 1 in 3 children struggle with food allergies. And it's because of the overwhelming amount of processed foods that so many kids eat nowadays.
Yeah. So. And speaking of Europe, you know, all the colored foods we have here in the U.S., none of those food dyes are allowed in the U.K. and in Europe. So, you know, there's something to this that we really need to take a deeper look at and wonder why the FDA allows all of these chemicals in our food. So I would definitely want to look at the dyes in our foods first and foremost for kids who are struggling.
Dairy and dyes are the first things I recommend parents take out when they have behavioral issues.
Yeah.
I saw it with my own middle son. We were going through a whole health thing. We were working on getting gluten out of their system and everything after they had had tests come back from their pediatrician. And I wasn't up to date on the dyes at that point. But I do remember my son coming home and he wanted Jell-O. And so for that week, like I had made different colored Jell-Os for him to have as a snack when he got home. And the behavior that happened when he had Jell-O 3 days in a row after he got home from school was mind blowing. And then we didn't give it to him for a couple of days and he was fine. And we went back to giving him the Jell-O, blue and red and green Jell-O. And he was bonkers. He was mad. He was throwing things, temper tantrums, everything. And I was like, oh my God, it's the dyes. It is the food dyes. And like from that day forward, they have never been in our house, you know, and we ended up finding out shortly after that, that our daughter has an anaphylaxis allergy to food dyes. So I was glad we got rid of them, but
yeah,
it's amazing the behavioral differences a lot of parents see when they remove the dyes, and you have to be very, very vigilant in looking at everything in your house that has dyes, whether it's even laundry detergents and things like that, soaps, lotions, shampoos, you know, bubbles for the bath time. Your skin is going to absorb all of these. So even if you've taken the dyes out of the food, but now you have a bubble bath your kid likes once or twice a week and it's got dyes in it, they're absorbing those dyes through their skin and it has the same result. So it's just mind-blowing to see the differences in kids when you completely remove it. And it's not just a day or two. It takes a couple of weeks sometimes up to 6 weeks to take them out and then add it back in and see what happens.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Well, that Shannon, that kind of goes into the toxin bucket, right? I mean, yes, it's a dye, but it's a toxin bucket. And that is a bigger bucket. If you look at toxins, what you clean with, what you're washing your clothes with, what your kids are putting on their skin, what you're putting on your skin, and adults, you know, adults with ADHD, you have control over what you buy in as far as your cleaning products and your body care products and things like that. So if you are struggling with attention, those would be the things that I know all of us on this podcast would urge you to just take the time, one room at a time, you know, start in your bathroom, pull out your stuff, look at it all. It, you know, if it's got dyes and something called fragrance, which is just a huge label for we've put chemicals in it. And unfortunately, it's not regulated well enough in our country. So fragrance can be anything, can be anything. So if it's got the word fragrance or perfume in it, those are just kind of ways for a company to sneak things in that it, you don't know where that scent came from. And that's the kind of stuff that are endocrine disruptors and neurologically could actually be causing you more harm, you know, just by what you're putting on your body or what you're washing in your laundry room or what you're using on your cutting board to clean. So going room by room is my suggestion on lowering your toxic load. And, you know, start in your refrigerator, your pantry, just pick one place. But the other piece too is if you are an adult with attention issues, alcohol is not your friend. Alcohol is considered a neurotoxin as far as, you know, what it does when it goes into the body. Yes, it makes you feel good and gets you, you know, more relaxed. But on the back end, it gives you a backhand slap because now your body's got to detox from it. And it's going to cause you to have more struggles with your attention, you know, even the next day.
And a lot of kids who have food sensitivities will have chemical sensitivities as well.
Yep.
But generally, you don't know what they are until you start removing all of that. It was one of the things we had to do with our kids while they were in school before I took them out to homeschool them, was I had to have a note from the doctor saying, because they would make them, they would spray Lysol in the classroom and they would wash the desk down with Clorox wipes and all of this. And I had had the doctor write a note that they are not to be in the classroom, you know, with Lysol being sprayed, and prefer that it be sprayed at the end of the day when the kids leave, because it's a neurotoxin. It's a proven neurotoxin. And then the Clorox wipes, they're also a toxin. So it was like, I have my own wipes. They can bring in and wash their desks with that. You know, it's proven to be even stronger than the Clorox wipes as far as killing things. So, you know, we had to make those adjustments for our kids in school as well. But we noticed a huge difference, you know, especially like if days that things were used and their behavior when they came home from school, versus I could tell the days that they weren't using those things around them when they came home. And because our home has been chemical free for over 20 years because of the issues that they've had. So, and it was a process. It was a step-by-step process that we had to take. Along with chemicals, we talk about neurotoxins. I think it's a good time to bring up the fact that we have a lot of electronics and excessive screen time that's going on, right? We could consider that a toxin to the brain, because of all of these signals and EMFs and, you know, everything that is going on, that dopamine effect that electronics give us. Kathy, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Bobby touched on this a little while ago, that the frontal region of the brain, it's affected by EMFs. And there was actually a study in 2008 following over 13,000 mothers and children, which indicated a 80% higher tendency for children to have behavioral, emotional, and hyperactive behaviors after excessive pre- and postnatal cell phone exposure. So even in the womb, these kids were having issues if they were exposed to EMFs. So I think that's just fascinating. And really, I mean, kids nowadays, like you said, we're just handing them a tablet or whatever to keep them quiet when we're trying to have dinner, and it's just making things worse. So there's actually the 5G towers too, which are so popular. They're putting them up at school, you know, schoolyards. There's in Wisconsin, they're actually, they had people are protesting this, and there's actually 12,000 studies showing harm from wireless radiation, EMF, cell towers, cell phones, tablets, and books. So, I mean, this is definitely directly linked to autism, depression, anxiety, ADHD, cancer, diabetes, and thyroid problems. So really think about, you know, how the 5G towers are being where they're at, where you live, if you're near one. There's actually a resource, a tower where you can go look it up. We'll put that in our notes, but you can actually see where the local towers are near your house. And I know it's not easy just to up and move. And I've actually seen people, you know, who were safe and then they put one up next to their house. So, I mean, it's pretty bad what they're doing. But there are ways to mitigate that as well. There's different, Sungite is a big one. You know, there's different EMF protection that you can put on your phone, on your body, pendants in your house and things like that. So definitely highly recommend you all look into that as well.
And you can turn your Wi-Fi off at night if you, you know, you can try a little study, right? Turn it off.
Yeah, that's worth it.
See how you feel when you wake up the next day and do it for multiple days in a row. What goes hand in hand with that, Cappy, and we talked a little bit about this before we went on air, was heavy metals. When your body is got a high heavy metal load, you are like an antenna. And so EMFs actually, you know, cause more issues with your body, the higher heavy metals that you have. And we've all opened up the, you know, battery case of a flashlight or something, you know, that has batteries in it that's been corroded. And that's pretty much what's kind of going on in our system, especially with the symptoms of ADHD, is when you have a high heavy metal load, you've got all the water in our body, which our body's made, you know, 97% of water. And you've got the electrolytes and different things that are in our body. And then you've got the heavy metals. And I remember hearing that your firstborn baby, if mama has mercury fillings, gets the most heavy metal delivered to them in utero. And it gets less as, you know, the more kids you have is less delivered to them. So, you know, a lot of times they talk about ADHD. Well, it's hereditary. Well, what's hereditary is your heavy metal load. Sometimes when you come into this world, you already, you know, the baby already has a heavy metal load that they're, you know, had no part in getting except that they were born. So heavy metals can be something that our body struggles with and you don't even have any idea. There's a layer in your gut that is about 2 inches thick and it's designed to filter your heavy metals that come in through your diet and your water, because you can get it through your water. You can get it through plants and food and air. Obviously, like I said, you can come into this world with it, but if that barrier is damaged from the glyphosate and the stress and the processed foods, alcohol, pathogens, toxins, all the things we've already listed, that is not filtering out the heavy metals. And that can be one of the biggest reasons that you struggle, is that you or your child just has too high of a heavy metal load. And there's ways you can get it down. And that would be working with a health coach or another provider that's can work on that. But you can definitely know that there is a correlation with a high heavy metal load and an ADD, an ADHD, or even autism.
Yeah. And it's a huge, huge part of it. And we get heavy metals overload, toxin overload from heavy metals from everywhere, whether it's chemicals, whether it's food, whether it's the air that we're breathing, right? Vaccines, you know, all of these different things. I remember when my son was diagnosed at age 12 with the traumatic brain injury, and then a year or two later with autism, that was one of the biggest things that we were told, is that he never should have had vaccines because of the overload of heavy metals in them did so much more damage to his brain in the affected area, you know, which was heartbreaking to me as a mom, because I thought I was doing the right thing. You know, he was born premature. I questioned him getting the vaccines because he was born premature. His immune system was still, you know, not up to par. And we did it anyways. And so, you know, one of the things with my son's brain injury, we didn't realize until he was 12, was that that's why he cried all the time when he was younger, because he has constant pain in that side of his brain all the time. So, and he didn't realize it until he'd actually told the neuropsychologist of, you know, he noticed one day the pain went away and that was his first day of normalcy, you know? And then it came back and he was like, oh, that hurts. And he's noticed it every day since. Right. So it's crazy. The brain is it can do so many things, but it's also very sensitive, you know, and we need to pay particular attention to it. When it comes to this subject, the brain, we really have to focus on what is neuroprotectant for the brain, you know. And we've done an episode on brain health talking about dementia and Alzheimer's, right? This is the type of thing that if you're struggling with ADHD, ADD, autism, this is going to affect in that longer term dementia, Alzheimer's, and things like that that may come about. You're more prevalent to have those types of things. So it's better to get a handle on it now, either while children are young or if you're an adult and you're understanding the process of what's going on, how to really go throughout these things. So
would you guys all agree that if you've got a leaky gut, you've got a leaky brain?
Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
Yes.
No doubt.
Yep. Yeah. Like I said, it's a two-way communication. If one's one's struggling, the other one is too.
Yep. And I have heard
love on your vagus nerve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard that post-concussion, so you bang your head, right? Your gut is leaky. Like within hours of hitting your head, you can have a leaky gut. And it's kind of crazy when you think about that. But I know, unfortunately, our family has suffered, my kids and my husband, and even I in college had a concussion, lots of concussions. And, you know, a lot goes into protecting your gut and your brain. You know, if you can cover those two bases with healthy living, healthy water, healthy food, organic, stress reduction, sleep, you know, really focusing on those things would be one of the things that I would suggest to any parent starting down this journey or any adult that is really looking to up level their health and address their attention issues is start with your gut. Protect your gut and your brain, but protect your gut. What's going in, make it healthy and take out what's going in that's not healthy and really reconsider it.
And that's one thing I do want to mention too. We talked about it on the other episode, like you said, with the brain health, but getting those healthy fats, your brain needs healthy fats, avocados, walnuts, avocado oil, good fish oils, you know, eating those fatty fishes. So really that helps to nourish your brain and will help, you know, some of these issues, you know, resolve some of these issues.
Yep.
EPA, DHA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It can't make a cell wall without healthy fats.
Right.
And one last thing I want to touch on today before we move on, because the next episode we're going to talk about kind of moving forward from this, what everybody can do, right? Is when we're looking at kids and adults, we're talking about obviously your body needs nutrients. You may have a heavy overload of heavy metals, like all these different things. And one of the key things for your body detoxing is being able to poop. Being able for your body to get rid of all of those things. And there's a lot of kids with autism, they struggle with like constipation, right? A lot of kids in general struggle with constipation, especially if they're eating a lot of processed foods. Kathy, what impact does that have?
Well, it's the constipation, you know, is a huge issue. Absolutely. We need to get things moving in whatever way you can do that, drinking more water, getting more fiber and things like that. But the thing I wanted to focus on is doctors recommending to parents to take Miralax. Miralax is actually only recommended for kids over 17, if you look at the label, and it's only supposed to be used for a couple of weeks at a time. And I know parents who are using it long-term. And one of the reasons this is an issue is it contains polyethylene glycol, which is basically antifreeze. They call it PEG, P-E-G for short. And there are definitely studies showing that there is issues it contributes to some of these attention deficit disorders. So if you are struggling with somebody who is having not regular bowel movements, some of the other things that they recommend are lactulose can be given to children younger than 3 years old. It's very gentle, so that's something I would look at. Mineral oil is the second one they recommend. Magnesium laxatives, like milk of magnesia. And there's different forms of magnesium that you can get, magnesium hydroxide, oxide, or citrate. And then this one was new to me. It's called Colace, C-O-L-A-C-E. It's docusate sodium. I've never heard of this one, but it says it helps to draw water and fats into the stool so that it makes them bulk and it's easier to pass. So if you have your kids on this Miralax, try to find an alternative.
Yep. And vagus nerve stimulation too, Kath, right?
Absolutely.
Getting the connection from your brain to your gut that says, start moving things down the line. And if that connection is damaged by stress or lack of sleep or trauma or toxins, that you're going to have problems with backup. And so not just focusing on, you know, all the things that we've been telling you, but just making sure that you can get the child calmed down so that their body is relaxed enough to actually have a bowel movement. Or if you are as an adult, you're constipated all the time, look into how to stimulate your vagus nerve. There's tons of ways. We've done podcasts on it, but it will help. It will definitely help.
Yeah. And
I also want to add.
Go ahead, Jane.
Sorry. I also want to add in quick colonic massage. So you can do a colonic massage on your child. They can learn to do it on themselves. They can squat over the toilet to facilitate better removal of the waste material. And I don't know. I also thought about castor oil packs, but it may be a certain age range that we're looking at for that too. I certainly don't think it may be something you could put on an infant, but that's another thing that to consider.
Oh, yeah, you can use those on little kids, maybe not infants, but little kids can definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't forget your squatty potties too. Get those up. Yeah. So you're in a better position to actually evacuate.
Yep.
And when we're talking about kids and we're talking about the fact like electronics, we're in a society where there's so much electrical stimulation, kids being set in front of screens or sitting in front of screens all day at school, right? Movement is key. Sitting is the new smoking, right? You got to get up. You got to get moving. It plays a role in all of the organs in your body. So, all right. So that is it for this episode. We hope that you have enjoyed this open conversation that we have had here. More to come on episode 2. We're going to talk a little bit more about genetics and detoxing and some therapies that go along with ADHD and autism and just a whole realm of things moving forward on this subject. So we all look forward to seeing you at that episode. Have a great week and be well.